You know what? Let me turn off my phone so it won't ring at least.
Okay, right here. There we go. We're taking care of business here, getting phones taken care of and everything.
Modern nuisances.
That's right. That's right. Well, this is Wednesday, January 16th, 2013, and we are at WHAS Studios, actually at the desk where Paul Rogers does his stuff. We're talking to Paul Rogers, a veteran sportscaster here in Louisville, and a fellow who's been around WHAS. Now, I guess you're the longest current, tenured current employee. Is that right?
That I am.
When did you start?
I'm in my 40th year.
Are you kidding? I started in
August of 1973.
Here at HAS?
Yep.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize.
So this is where I am and where I've been. People say, where else have you worked? I say, nowhere.
This is it.
This is it.
I didn't realize it had been that long.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's great. Well, now, you're from Louisville.
Grew up in Louisville.
Go to school here.
Went to Eastern High School. Went to the University of Kentucky, which is ironic since
yes.
I now do the
U of L basketball,
the Louisville games. Football. But it's been a labor of love. It's fun to work in your hometown because there's so much history that you know without having to look up, and I think you have a great feel for what's important and what the people get tuned into, which is timely now
sure,
with Louisville
yeah.
being ranked number one for the first time ever.
Yeah.
So things are good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And had a great football with Sugar Bowl. We'll talk
yep.
about that in a minute, too. Well, now, Paul, your dad is with us here, too. Bob Rogers is with us. Did you grow up with a basketball and a football and a baseball in your hand? Were you a sports nut?
Absolutely.
I know you're a great golfer. Did you start playing golf at 2 years old?
I wish I'd started golf when I was younger. Unfortunately, I didn't get into that till I was an adult, and by then I had too many habits to ever break. But no, I was
doing pretty well.
I'm still working on it. But I was your basic, as everyone was in that era, late 50s, early 60s, three-sport guy, football, baseball, basketball. Baseball was probably my best sport, but I remember playing them all. I remember playing for a church softball team that Dad coached.
Oh, really?
In fact, they were older boys at the time, and they needed somebody to fill in, and I came in and played a few games when they needed a player, or else they'd have to forfeit the game, and I'd fill a plug in right field or something.
Yeah, but, right field.
Yeah, I mean, sports has been part of me as long as I can remember. Dad was always around, helped coaching. Little League baseball, and
now you're the only son. You have two sisters,
right? Two sisters.
So you got. Were your sisters athletic at all?
Not especially. My older sister had some interest, but neither of them ever played. Of course, there weren't that many opportunities for women back then as well. My younger sister, I don't recall ever really having much interest in sports.
Well, now Bob Rogers, your dad is here. Bob, when he was growing up, obviously involved in sports with him, did you mm-hmm. think that someday he would be doing what he's doing today?
No, I'll tell you the truth, I really didn't.
When he it's was a surprise up, to me.
Well, I knew he always loved sports, but back then I really thought, I don't know if he could make a living just doing sports.
Oh, yeah. That's...
I didn't think that there would be that opportunity. Although, the one good thing about raising Paul was there was no doubt what he wanted to do when he grew up. He had a one-track mind, and that was something in sports. But he was also very good in math, science, in school. And I thought, maybe he could make a career in that. I didn't know. I remember one time I just helped found our engineering company, Vitok Engineers. And we had a new project that I was heading up down in Brandenburg, Kentucky, at Olin Matheson. And Paul was a senior in high school at that time, and I thought, I need to show him some other options besides sports. I'm not sure he can make a living doing just sports. So I asked him to go with me one day down there on a Saturday. I had to go down there on the job to do some work down there. And I took him with me, and he met some of the engineers there, and we spent the day there. And on the way back, we stopped at Doe Run Inn for lunch. I don't know if Paul remembers this or not.
I do.
But he said, Dad, I want to thank you for taking me down there because it helped me make up my mind. I know I don't want to do that.
Well, I heard that was a defining moment.
That was a defining
moment. It was for both of us, actually. Yeah. And what's interesting is, as I know now as an adult, exactly where he was coming from. I mean, when I have young students come in and want to be a sportscaster, I look at them and I think, do you know what the odds are of you getting to do this? And I look at me and I say, do I know what the odds are of me doing what I'm doing? It's incredibly low, and I'm incredibly lucky, and I treasure it every day.
Well, I heard a story before we started recording here about you would do play-by-play when you're playing basketball out in the driveway or something.
Oh, yeah. We had basketball goal up over the garage. and played all the time, snow, rain, sleet, you name it. And usually while I was playing, I was calling a game at the same yeah. time, too.
And always the 10 seconds to go.
Line went. And, of course, I always made the game-winning
sure,
shot.
Sure, yeah, that's right. That's
Let
right.
me just mention one other thing. It was about that time when was it Mike Pratt, Dan Issel, these fellas were playing mm-hmm. for Kentucky. And he was a UK fan growing up. And he kept a book of statistics of every game.
That was actually back in the Runts. That was the Runts and Louis Dampier and that crew.
Yeah, that's right. It was Ruff
wow.
Runts.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But he kept a little booklet of statistics of every game. Shots made, shots taken, field free throws, everything.
And I did it by listening to Kaywood.
How about that? You were in training, huh? Yeah. Well, so you went to Eastern High School, went to UK. Were you involved in sports at all at UK, or were you working at a radio station or a television station or something?
I played high school sports, basketball primarily. I actually tried out for UK's freshman team. Joby Hall was the freshman coach then. That's when they had freshman teams. And I actually made it to the last cut.
Is that right?
I got a job at the radio station, the student station at UK, beginning my sophomore year, through the advice actually of Kaywood. I'd met with him, and he suggested I do this, go talk to them. Fortunately, they had a guy who was doing sports who was a senior when I was a freshman. He left. I auditioned for the job, got it. And so for 3 years at UK, I did a daily sports show and broadcast the home basketball and football game.
Wow.
So when I got out of college, I had 3 years of experience that very few college
Big
people have.
Experience, yeah.
And as luck would have it, right at that time, HAS had an opening. Kaywood Ledford hired me. And I was on cloud nine.
Oh, wow, I guess you were. Now, this was what time frame was this?
This was all the 60s? Summer. I was in UK. I was at UK from 69 to 73.
So who were on the basketball teams? And you were calling
my freshman year, UK had a number one ranked basketball team that Dan Issel and Mike yeah. Pratt played on. Actually, it was the next year though that I started doing the games, and those teams were good. That was right at the beginning. I'm trying to get my years straight.
Was that Adolph Rupp still there? Or yeah,
Rupp was still there. Joby took over my senior year.
Wow.
So I did 2 years of Rupp and 1 year of Joby.
That was a heck of a bridge there, wasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. Very good. Mm-hmm. So you had met Kaywood already, mm-hmm. and you had some contact, and HAS had an opening, and you came to work. That was a big step, I mean, to go from college. Of course, I didn't realize you'd had the experience you'd had. But
it was huge. It was odd. I was actually working that summer as an intern at Wave, which, like us back then, was TV and radio, like mm-hmm. WHAS was TV and radio. And I was a news intern, but they knew I liked sports, and they would give me the opportunity to do sports occasionally. And I got to know Mike James, who was a sportscaster yep. at WHAS at that time. And I didn't really know what I was going to do after that summer. And toward the end of the summer, he said, I think we're going to add a man to our sports department. You should call Kaywood. So I did. And fortunately, I'd gotten to know Kaywood a little bit from being at UK, and he knew who I was, just another young kid out there, but yeah. at least he knew who I was.
I think he had an eye for talent.
So I went, talked to him, left him on audition tape. A couple of days later, my phone rang. I'll never forget this. My mom answered the phone. She said, Paul, telephone. Picked it up, and Paul, this is Kaywood Ledford. I went, oh, wow, this is pretty neat. And his first words, I remember it vividly, were, boy, have you improved.
Exactly.
Because he had critiqued some earlier tapes for me.
Wow.
So he
That's
said.
That's a lot of praise from
yeah,
Kaywood Ledford.
Yeah. So I'm already getting kind of excited. He said, can you come down and see me? I said, sure. So I think the next day. And he never really actually said, you're hired. He just started telling me all the stuff that I was going to do. And I said, okay.
What did you do? You started, were you radio and television?
Uh-huh. Or? We all did both.
Who was in the, Kaywood and was Van?
Kaywood, Van Vance, and Mike James were the sports people
yeah.
back then. Now, Mike was the main TV anchor. Kaywood did UK, Van did Colonels,
and
they needed someone also to do U of L games at that time. Now, we all did some of everything, but those were kind of your primary niche roles. So I did the Louisville games for 1 year. Then we lost the contract, and so I kind of got phased into doing more TV and did weekend TV and continued to do sports on radio and the like. And eventually, over time, the Colonels folded. We got the U of L contract back, but Van Vance, who had been doing the Colonels, did the U of L games until he retired, and then I took over the U of L games after that.
Huh.
Took me 20 years to get back to where I started, which was doing the darn ball games.
Let's talk about Kaywood a minute. Kaywood is obviously a very special guy to UK fans, but he was just a man of integrity and mm-hmm. everybody enjoyed. Talk about your experience with Kaywood a minute.
Couldn't meet a better boss, friend, mentor, whatever. I mean, he was, you learn so much just by listening to him. he was very willing to help but would not interfere. I mean, he wouldn't come tell you how to do a game. But if you had a question, Kaywood, how do you do this? What do you think about this? He was always there to offer advice. And you just saw how much everybody respected and admired him. He was such a professional. And he was a great person to have grown up listening to and then to learn from a closer standpoint as a boss as well.
Well, it just occurred to me, we're talking about basketball and football, but you've done horse racing too. You've done the Derby and races at Churchill Downs. How did that happen?
That happened because of Kaywood. Yeah. He wanted somebody who could relieve him. At that time, we were doing a feature race every day. And, of course, in November, he'd be gone for football games, and they wanted somebody. And he said, I want you to go out and call races. Well, I was petrified, but I didn't know any better. I found out later he'd tried to get a lot of people to do it. Nobody would.
Nobody would do it.
But I was too young and dumb to know better. I just thought I was supposed to go do it. So I went out and practiced a few races and eventually, you know, got to where I was filling in for him. And then I remember after he did the 1983 Kentucky Derby, he said, Rook, he used to call me Rook for rookie all the time. I said, Rook.
After all these years.
Yeah, still. So that's my last Derby. I said, what? He said, my eyesight's just not real sharp. He said, that's my last Derby. It's yours from here on. So I've done every one since 1984.
Yes, right.
And I'm about to turn it over. My eyesight's beginning to wane a little bit.
Oh, well, tell me a little bit about calling a horse race. That's so different from most things, or it seems to me it is. How do you sort all that out when you got 20 horses on the backside? You have a system for that?
It's the hardest thing to do. It is for me anyway, and I think most people would agree. You just have to go by name and colors, associate what the jockey silks look like, and that's that horse. The easier part about the Derby is you've kind of watched these horses all winter and spring, but the hard thing is there's so darn many of them.
Yeah.
And they do get jumbled up together, and you get a lot of similar colors. When you got 20 horses, you know, not everybody's going to be a whole lot different. There's going to be some that look similar. So it's a challenge, and it's tricky, but it's a great thrill.
Nothing like when at the top of the stretch and hear those start coming down.
And there's, you know, in all honesty, there's not that many people in terms of the world population that is called the Kentucky Derby.
Really,
so
true.
That's
kind
of a special thing to know, too.
Yeah. Huh. I forgot. I was going to ask you something about we're going to talk about basketball and football games in a minute. What about memorable derbies? Anything stand out in your mind? Are they all memorable, too?
They're all memorable. It's hard for me to pick one. Several come to mind. For some reason, I've always really liked my call when I hear it of the 1997 Derby that Silver Charm won. It was a close stretch run that he held on and won over Captain Bodgett. The year before, Silver Charm, who was trained by Bob Baffert had a horse named Cavaneer who looked like he was going to win the Derby, and Grindstone came flying and won in that photo finish. That's the only Derby I've seen that I didn't know who won. Nobody knew. The photo finish was that close in that Derby, and that was really exciting too. But they're all so exciting and so special in different ways.
Yeah. You look forward to it?
Oh, yeah.
Derbies especially.
I get pretty nervous, but...
Yeah, that's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, but fortunately, actually because of the national rights, we do not have the rights to call the race live, so I'm just taping it for our archives. So if I, you know, really botch one, no one would really ever know. I'd find a way to. I don't know what happened to that tape. I can't find it.
Tricks of the trade. Let's go back a minute and talk about. We're sitting right now. The studio's on Bishop Lane, but you started down when HAS Radio and Television were together down at 6th and Chestnut. What was that like? You had radio and television all together there?
You know, we're all nostalgic. We pine for the old days. It was different. It was neat. That's when you had radio and TV were together, and Courier Journal and Standard Gravure were right next door. They were all owned by the Binghams. As I said, we were all interchangeable in terms of the radio and TV. Now we're here. Now we're separate. But there are 8 different radio stations in this building, now owned by Clear Channel. But that's the world. It changes. You know, you adapt. It's a whole lot different. In terms of the structure, in terms of the corporate structure and all. But fortunately for me, it really has changed very little. I've kind of always done what I do, and thankfully without a whole lot of interference from above. I guess I've been around long enough, they say, he's figured it out, and nobody really bosses me around too much here.
Well, we're sitting here recording on a digital recorder. The equipment has changed in 40 years. Talk about that some. What did you start out with?
Huge difference. We started out, actually, we used some reel-to-reel sums back then still.
Right?
But as far as portable for doing pregame interviews and on-site interviews, cassette recorders. Yeah, we used cassette recorders back then. transferred them onto what were called carts that were played back. You know about those in the studio. Now, of course, everything is put into the computer and played back on audio files. So the technology has changed greatly.
When you travel, do you have an engineer that travels with you, or are you, you what equipment?
In football, we do travel with an engineer because it's a bigger production. We have a sideline guy, which adds a whole other element. In basketball, generally on road games, I do my own engineering. We use a pretty basic setup, and so don't do anything too elaborate.
Ever had any moments where
something
happened or interrupted or all that sort
Frequently.
Of thing?
Frequently. That's always something you're fighting, or if you're not fighting, you're worried about it. The best feeling is when you go plug everything in and hook up, and it says connected. You go, thank goodness. But you go, and a phone system won't work, or a phone line won't work, or there'll be a glitch somewhere. I mean,
and you're trying to concentrate on a ball game,
exactly.
And you've got to solve these things.
Can be a little distracting.
Tell me about the building we're in here now. This is you've got 8 radio stations in here, and
we've been in here how long now? Gosh, I don't know, 10 or 12 years. I can't remember when we moved. Maybe longer than that. But I still get lost in this building.
It's a big place,
as you said, there's 8 radio stations. Plus there's offices. It's a place that's laid out in kind of a maze-like fashion, and I still will come to an intersection, and if I'm not going from point A to point B, but maybe I stopped off for something, I have to kind of get my bearings again and think, now, wait a minute, which way do I go here? But it's a lot different. But you've got a lot of people here all working for the same
nice
common
thing,
goal.
We just, as we came in, you were sitting, Denny Crum was sitting in the Shea in the cafeteria.
What we used to call the Shea Cook.
Yeah, that's right, Shea Cook.
One of the other stations here is 790 WKRD. This is where Joby and Denny do their show from. That studio is right literally across the hall from the WHAS studio. In fact, I do a little bit every morning. It still takes me a while to get used to this of going to different radio stations.
Yeah, I hear you on WKRD.
Right.
I hear you here. I hear you do a sports report, and then 2 minutes later, I hear you on KRD.
Yeah, people say, boy, how'd you get there so fast? I said, well, it's about 4 steps. But I go across the hall and do a bit with Drew Diener every morning.
You have to adjust a little bit to remember what you've said before or who you're saying it to and everything.
So it's kind of different working for both, but it's all the same owners. The money goes to the same people, so we're all supposed to do the best we can for whichever station we're on.
Well, let's see, you've also got traffic in here, and the Kentucky News Network, I think, is in here, too.
Yeah,
so
all those spots here.
Yeah. Well, you went to UK and wind up doing all the U of L games. any challenge with that or anything? Or?
There hasn't been. It's been so long. I mean, I obviously don't hate UK. I grew up a fan and went to school there, but I really don't have the personal ties there. None of the people are there now who were there when I was there. All of the people I know and work with are at U of L. I love the university and what they've done there.
Boy, haven't they
and
done some
it's,
amazing.
It's, I mean,
well, you've worked with several, at least, who was the athletic director when you first went in there?
When I first came, it was Dave Hart.
He
was the AD, been through several ADs, Bill Olson and Tom Juric, the primary ones, numerous football coaches, all of whom have been uniquely different, but lots of fun in different ways.
Who was coaching when you first started?
T.W. Alley.
Really?
Who was succeeded by Vince Gibson.
I remember that.
Who was succeeded by Bob Weber, followed by Howard Schnellenberger, Ron Cooper, John L. Smith, keep going here, Bobby Petrino. Steve Cragthorpe, and now, of course, Charlie Strong.
That's pretty good.
I've only had 2 basketball coaches in all that time.
That's right. At least you got a break there.
Yeah. Denny Crum and Rick Pitino.
Talk a minute about when Howard Schnellenberger came. That was I think in most people's minds think that it was kind of a turning point in U of L football. What were your experiences with that?
He was a real visionary. Howard it gets a lot of credit for where U of L is now. He sort of started people thinking it could be done here. And you had a guy like Tom Juric come in and build things up phenomenally and various coaches and people along the way. But Howard was sort of the guy who came in and I think got to people thinking, wow, you know, he dreamed big. And Howard's a man who got the stadium built. He was a highly entertaining man.
Still is.
really liked him. He was a lot of fun to work with. Understood the media, knew what to say, how to say it.
Kind of put everything together, really, didn't he?
And he was a lot of fun. There are very few football games that I broadcast that something doesn't happen that brings to mind a Schnellenbergerism in my in my brain.
Wow, that's amazing. You broadcast the Fiesta Bowl then, I guess, didn't you?
I did. I did not do the play-by-play on that game. Van was doing the play-by-play then, and I was actually doing color on that game.
Okay. Yeah, well, that was a special moment. Mm-hmm. That was great. I remember here at HAS, we had a plane load of fans that went out. Lou and I got to go out with them. Flew out that morning, came back that night, but that was an unbelievable
That was
game.
One of the first times that you talk about the way Louisville fans just completely overran New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl, which was so exciting. But the Fiesta Bowl was sort of the first time that happened for football, where a bunch of people went somewhere. Now, many of them, like you did, went the day of the game. Yep. It was just kind of expensive to go to Phoenix and stay a few days, so they actually put together some charters that flew out that day.
Time lag, so you get out.
But I remember coming out, the team coming out on the stadium there at in Phoenix, and the throngs of Louisville people who got up and cheered. It was like, wow, this is really something neat. And there's some debate, you know, was the biggest game that one or the Sugar Bowl or whatever. And I was kind of leaning toward the Fiesta Bowl for a while because it was the first time on the big stage. But then considering the caliber of team Louisville beat in the Sugar Bowl and what they're set up to do down the road, I'm kind of leaning toward the Sugar Bowl as maybe the biggest win. But it would never have happened if you not had that Fiesta Bowl and all the building blocks along the way. That's why it's so hard to say the best or most important or biggest of anything, because it doesn't get there unless you have those that take you there along the way.
That's right. Who are some of the people, you mentioned you did color for Van, who are some of the people you've worked with over the years and who've been your partners?
I actually did sidelines for several years with Van. Then for 1 year, I moved up into the booth because the person who was doing color at the time, I believe was Steve Corso, who was Lee Corso's son.
Oh, really?
Left. And so I went to the booth, and we brought in Doug James, and he did sidelines. Well, I heard about one game of that, and I said, guys, we got the wrong guy on the sidelines. So the next year we moved Doug into the booth as Van's color man. The next year Van retired, and I took over football. So then Doug and I worked together for 7 years.
That's a great team.
Great time together. Yeah. He had to leave, and Craig Swabeck, a former player, joined me. We did 10 years, and we had a great rapport together. Since Craig, I've had a hard time keeping people. I don't know if I'm getting old and crotchety or what, but we've had several people come in. And actually, I joke, I say, if you want to be if you want to pursue your coaching career, come be my color man, because they do it a year and they seem to get a job somewhere. So anyway, my partner now is Joe Tronzo, a former Louisville player, does the color with me, and Doug Orme has been with us for several years as our man on the sidelines.
What about basketball? Who you worked with?
I started with Jock.
Jock Sutherland, until Denny retired.
Jock was a character. Oh, he was loads of fun. Jock was a great aide to me. He'd worked the games many years with Van, but I knew Jock.
Jock was a former coach himself.
Yes, he coached at Lexington Lafayette, won a state championship. Got involved in radio, and he's just such a colorful character. People loved him, and he would spin his yarns.
Loved or hated him.
true. But when Van retired and I took over, Jock immediately came to me and said, look, if you want to keep me, I'm happy to do it. If you want somebody else, it's up to you, whatever you want to do. I wouldn't dare have changed anything. He was very helpful, did anything I needed and asked. And anyway, when Denny retired, Jock decided he would retire also. And that's when we brought in Bob Valvano.
Oh, yeah.
So Bob and I have been doing the games for 12 years now, and he does have a number of conflicts with ESPN games, in which time usually Doug Orme then fills that slot.
Yeah. Huh. Basketball coaches, you've worked with two. Talk about that a little bit.
Two brilliant coaches, two very different people. Denny was as laid back as a coach could be in terms of dealing with us. I'm not saying he wasn't an intense basketball coach. He was. But he would come out and do the post-game interview, and you rarely could tell the difference whether they won or whether they lost. With Rick, we pray for wins because he is no fun to talk to after losses. But a great guy, loads of fun. I'm not sure people know how fun-loving Rick Pitino can be, because he is such an intense and competitive guy. But he's intensely loyal to his friends, to his family, to his coaches, to his players, and he's been a real pleasure to work with too.
Well, I go to church with your dad, and your dad was telling me a story once about after one of the particular games last year, year before last, and Louisville had lost, and you got a call at 3 o'clock in the morning, well, let's go play golf or something. What was that?
We had a little break.
It was actually
after a win that he had decided he wanted to do this little golf getaway. They had a break, and he wanted to go recruit a player in Florida, and he wanted to go play golf, and so he asked me if I could go. I said, heck yeah. We did have one more game to play, which we lost. And he was not happy right then. So we got on the plane, and by the time we got down there, things were better.
It had worked out.
There were four of us. It wasn't just him and me. There were two other friends of his, too. And by the time we got down there, he kind of needed a little getaway. We all did, and had a nice little time together. But that's he doesn't take many breaks during the season, very few.
I was going to ask you about, talked about coaches. What are some of the memorable players that you've watched in football, first of all, that you've had the pleasure of calling? You had some great people.
Man, there's too many to mention.
It always amazed me the number of people from Louisville who've gone on to the pros, and you called many of them.
When Charlie Strong came here and he started going back, he's really big on tradition and values and what's been done. He was amazed at how many former Louisville players have played in Super Bowls.
Yeah.
I think it's in the 20s.
Is that right? Wow.
But, I mean, I can even go back to – I saw Tom Jackson play here. You know, they've had a great line of quarterbacks, and the one they got right now might be the best one of all, Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah.
But you go back through Braum, Redmond, LaFors,
Nagel.
I mean, just so many of them. And there's been – I mean, there have been the good defensive players come through here, linebackers, defensive ends, Frank Minifield and a cornerback.
Deion Branch
played here.
Ernest Givens, several others.
Yeah, Branch went on to be a Super Bowl MVP. There's been a lot of great football players, and, I mean, you know, basketball, gosh – again, just a list that goes on and on.
Yeah, but when you're calling a game, you think this guy has got it, that this person is going to go on to another level. Can you kind of explain?
You know, most of the time, I just don't think that way. I mean, certainly there are guys you see and you know they're big time players, but there have been guys that you don't necessarily think that about who then do go on to make it in the pros. But I'm the world's worst talent evaluator. I'm just not good at projecting. So I just kind of that's why I'm not real big on recruiting. I mean, it's the coach's job to get them here. It's my job to learn them once they get here, and then when they move on, best of luck.
They've been replaced. I want to ask your dad a question here real quick. Bob, what's it like to be, you know, you saw this kid playing basketball in the rain and the snow and calling, doing play-by-play. What's it like to sit home and listen to him on the radio? Because you've got a special device, haven't you, that lets you
– Well, actually, he gave me that for my birthday. It's where you can it's very frustrating without it, because I like to listen to Paul on the radio.
Sure.
But when he's 10 or 15 seconds ahead of
you're watching the television
picture, it's very frustrating. So he gave me this called a Sports Sync radio.
Which you call?
Which I call the DVE, the Dick Vitale Eliminator. Now I call it the BKE, Bobby Knight Eliminator.
I didn't know you were such a technical geek here, Bob.
Yeah, well, it's a great device to have, because now I can listen to Paul, and I'm very proud of Paul and what he has done. I think he does a great job calling the game. So it's a real pleasure to listen to him.
You go to some of the games?
No, I'd rather stay home and watch him and listen to him on radio.
Got the comfort of your home and got your son doing it.
It's really enjoyable to listen to him, and makes me very proud.
I bet it does. Paul, when you first came here, you worked at a station that was owned by the Binghams. Of course, a lot of history here. Any comments on your association with the Binghams while you were there? Do you have any contact with them?
I really had very little contact with the Binghams personally, but they ran the company the way a family ran company years ago. I mean, profits weren't their foremost concern. Yeah, they wanted to make money, but they didn't have to make 50% on the dollar. They would make 6 or 7% on the dollar. They were very involved in journalistic integrity, put their money into that. And it was just different from the corporate environment of today's world, where essentially radio stations are owned by banks and accountants who want to make money. And you can't really fault them for that, but there are times I do think the quality suffers somewhat.
So you work for Clear Channel now.
Clear Channel is a monstrous company, which actually its first major purchase, they owned a station in San Antonio, WOAI, which is sort of the WHAS of San Antonio, I think owned another station in Connecticut and bought WHAS, and that was sort of the big buy that propelled them into becoming the media mogul they now are.
That was
the big cash cow.
You watched that develop, didn't you?
We were the big cash cow
that
set them on their way.
Who are some of the managers you've worked for over the years here? Who was manager when you first came?
Hugh Barr was here. I guess Ed Shadburn was head over everything. Is that right? I'm trying to think out what structure.
Right,
but Hugh Barr was here. Jim Topmiller. He was sales manager. I don't think he was ever a general manager. But Jerry David Malloy, Denny Nugent,
Gary Bruce.
Yeah. I was picturing him and trying to think of him. Kelly Carls now has been. The structure changes so much, but Kelly Carls, who has been here quite some time, is sort of the equivalent now of a program director.
He is in there for a while.
Guys ever
I don't want to say interfere, but ever give you advice on your sports?
Some advice, but very helpful in many ways. They were always very supportive of me. Never promised me that I would take over the games when Van retired, but always kind of gave me the impression that if I hung in there and worked at it, I'd be the first guy they'd look at. So I appreciated that from them, and so I hung around, and play-by-play is what I love most. I enjoy other things, but that's what I like most, and I was really pining away there for a number of years, waiting for my turn and, frankly, looking for some other opportunities. None really came my way. When Van finally did decide to step down, they were kind enough to let me move into that spot.
Uh-huh. You also stop into the morning and do sports reports on the radio. You mentioned WKRD, but you've worked with very few morning men over here.
It's true. We had Wayne Perkey for many years, then Bob Sokoler for a few years, now Tony Cruz for the last several years. And the mornings have changed a little bit. Essentially, it's the same. We're a news, weather, traffic, information station in the mornings. The format gets tweaked a little bit here and there to adapt to modern times. For example, remember, we used to spend 20 minutes every hour given school closings. Yeah, well, now, you just go to the internet.
Right, yeah.
So
that shifted everything around.
Right. Yeah. So, but essentially, I've been doing – I actually went into started doing morning drive radio in 81. So I've been getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning for 30 however many years now.
Oh, that's
now.
Right. Even after a game, you've got to be in here.
So getting up is not my favorite thing to do.
Is that right, Dad? It never was.
He was pretty good.
But the good thing about working early mornings is you don't fight traffic coming to work. You don't fight traffic going home. And it does give you great flexibility. I'm on the air from 5 to 9. Now, during the season, I'm here considerably longer than that, working on game notes, stat notes, pregame interviews, what have you. But if I have to leave at 9, I can. I can work on all those other things basically whenever it fits my schedule.
Yeah.
And frankly, in the summertime, I'm rarely here after 9 o'clock, and I'm usually on the golf course by 9:30.
I was going to ask what you do in your off time. This is a very busy time for you. I know football and basketball especially. Mm-hmm. Just nuts with you. But
it just keeps you moving all the time. I mean, they don't play.
How do you keep it all straight in your head?
It's not that hard other than out cues. When I'm in that transitional phase, and invariably I'll do a football game and then go to a basketball game and say I'm on the U of L football network and then go to a football game and say I'm on the U of L basketball network.
You've done some of the same day, haven't you?
I have. There have been a few times that we've done doubleheaders where they'll play a football and a basketball game.
Fortunately, both here at the same
time. Right. But usually, there's been a few. I haven't missed very many, but there have been a few where it's just impossible. Where they were this year, for example, we played the Sugar Bowl the same day as they had a basketball game here. So I've been lucky to not have to miss too many games, and if at all possible, I do try and do them both.
You mentioned the games, basketball especially. Well, football too, but let's talk about the venues there. You saw basketball at Freedom Hall when you started.
Yeah.
A lot of tradition there. What was that? What was it like to win
Freedom Hall? I grew up there. That was the place I loved. And to this day, probably the most emotional broadcast I've ever been a part of was that last game at Freedom Hall. It was a perfect storm of circumstances where, first off, an historical arena. Secondly, Louisville's playing the number one team in the country. Third, they had to win the game probably to make the NCAA tournament. They pull all stops. I mean, they brought in every living All-American that ever played here, I think, and the crowd was so revved up. And
wasn't that Syracuse?
That was Syracuse. It was ranked number one.
Yeah.
And there were people literally.
Saturday and they're number one.
Right. But there were people literally crying at that game. And I had some people say to me, I don't know how you kept your composure. I said, I was crying. Well, the next day, I tape all my games and listen to them. And the next day I'm driving around town listening to the game, and tears start rolling down my cheeks when I hear that.
That
I mean, just the emotion
time,
of that game was something. So Freedom Hall was fabulous in its time, but, man, I've never seen a place like the KFC Yum Center.
Is that right?
It's
what
amazing.
What way do you mean that?
Just so bright, so modern, so lively, great crowds there. The fans have really taken to the place. It's become It's such a social place with its abundance of concessions and drinking areas, and the people just love the downtown environment.
Were you surprised by that? That it went downtown? Were you surprised by that? That it worked out well? Or
I won't say I was. Maybe a little pleasantly surprised. Yeah. I mean, it was what I hoped it would be.
Really?
I was not a naysayer by any means, but I just didn't know. I mean, people were all worried about the parking and the like, and for the most part, it's been you come in, you park, you hang around, and people seem to really enjoy it. And it's just been an environment that the people have really gotten tuned into, and it's great fun to do games there.
And you know, you talk about how technology has changed. Your Freedom Hall was not necessarily built for broadcast, but I'm sure that was big consideration at the Yum Center. So I would think.
It's still there's not a whole lot you can do with basketball. The thing, as a broadcaster, that I like is a little room. Recently did a game at Connecticut where I was at a little bitty table and I didn't even have room to put my papers down. And they wouldn't bring me a stat sheet. But here we have plenty of space. You know, we do have a lot of notes and stats to keep up with. And the more you can have in front of you, or rather than having to shuffle through papers in your lap, the easier it is.
Well, football, you started, was it Fairgrounds Stadium? Is that where you started calling games there, Fairgrounds Stadium?
My first year was the first year after they built the other bleachers on the other side. It used to be an L-shaped baseball stadium, and then they built the bleachers over the other side. And that was 1973. And that was my first year, and I did broadcast the games that year. And then, of course, Papa John's was built in 98.
What's that like? 98, is that? Wow.
And then they expanded it with the upper deck a few years ago. But, again, for all the places we go, and we go to some NFL stadiums in Tampa and Pittsburgh and other places, as far as a place for the media to work in terms of just convenience, sight lines, space, the media assistants and the like, none better.
I'm jumping around here a little bit, but I was just thinking about what a seat you have for the Kentucky Derby, too. Where are you situated for that?
It is good, but I tell you what, it's not as good since the renovation, only because what they did was they glassed in our booth. If you remember, we used to be in an open-air booth.
Yeah.
And now we are in a glass enclosed, I call it hermetically sealed booth, and you really lose the flavor. You don't hear or feel the crowd, which to me is a big part of it.
Sure, yeah, gets you into it.
And it's very fatiguing. We do that all day broadcast, and you just kind of feel so isolated from
things. Yeah,
you're
out there all day, Derby Day, and broadcasting all the races.
And it's a good vantage point. It's close to the finish line. It's high up. You can see, but I just don't like looking through glass.
I thought it was kind of neat on the old roof up there when you go into the...
Called the Plywood Palace?
Yeah.
We had various places up on the roof, various booths. One was literally a temporary plywood shack that they built for us to work in.
wild. Well, you've had a heck of a career, 40 years here at WHAS.
It's been a long run. Kaywood Ledford was my hero when he hired me here, and oddly enough, I'm now older than Kaywood was when he left here.
Is that right?
I've been here longer than he was.
Wow.
And it's been just a long, great run. I don't know how long it'll go, but I have no intention of stopping soon.
I think Milton Metz was here longer than anybody, but probably nobody longer. You may be second in that.
I think
right?
I am. I don't know all the numbers. I think Milton was here over 40.
Like
I said, I'm in my 40th year. And all of Clear Channel, I'm not sure how many people have been around longer than I have.
Yeah,
I'm talking about nationally. Here I am, the elder statesman, and even nationally, I may
be. We talked with Helen Huber.
She's number two here, right behind me.
Yeah, she's behind you. I thought she was along.
She's trying to push me out the door so she can get to number one.
Yeah, she just walked by a minute ago. I saw her. I wasn't sure if she was still here or not.
Helen's the one who keeps all the commercials playing.
Yeah, she does a great job of that. Well, anything else, Paul, you'd like to add about... we talked about special moments, Freedom Hall. Any other special moments that stand out in your mind with basketball or football games? Some championship games?
Every time, certainly, probably one of the most fun of my professional life was last year, that Final Four run they made. It came so out of the blue. I took a good friend of mine to New York for the Big East tournament. He'd never been, and he was prepared to go and spend a day and come home.
Big East tournament's a big thing,
So, of course, we end up there. We don't come home. They keep winning and winning and winning. So 4 days in New York City, won the Big East tournament, had a blast, came home, got sent out to Portland, of all places. But it turned out it was a good thing because when they went out to Portland, a lot of fans could not make it, which is unfortunate. It's great when you have your fans with you. but it turned into this is like a little traveling circus where we went to Portland, won the two games, didn't come home, went straight to Phoenix, which I didn't know was the plan. I had no change of clothes. But won two games in Portland, won two games in Phoenix, bought a shirt at the golf course, and just had an absolute blast as the team just kept winning and winning, and it was so much fun. And, of course, they bowed out against Kentucky, and I guess a great Kentucky team that won the championship. But that was probably the most, for a month long, I was hardly home, just on the road playing ball games. It was a total blast. There have been many other memorable games. The comeback against West Virginia and Albuquerque to go to the Final Four in 05. The football game when Louisville and West Virginia were both undefeated in 06. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just loads of memories. It would take forever.
Are you a memory keeper? Do you have things at home? Do you have shelves at home with things on them?
I have recordings of virtually every game I've done.
Really?
But I'm not I don't keep programs. I don't keep media guides. It's just too cluttery, too much to keep up with. But I do have recordings of virtually all my games. And, in fact, summer before last, I had back surgery, and I couldn't do anything. And I spent that summer pulling out a lot of old games and listening to them. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The Florida State football game here that they won in the rain.
The
Kentucky overtime football game, that West Virginia game I mentioned. So those are the things I collect, frankly, is the old tapes.
What a treat for a young guy, though, that played basketball in his driveway, calling games, and for 40 years be able to do that.
You know what's interesting? If you talk to almost every announcer I know, and it is kind of a neat fraternity. We all know each other for the different teams. We have great camaraderie and help each other and kid with each other and pull for our teams, but we're all friends. And almost all of them have the same story. Yeah, I sat up in the bleachers calling the game in my tape recorder. People thought I was crazy. We were all kind of nerdy in our own little way, but fortunately, it worked out.
Now, you love sports. You want to be involved in sports, but were your sights set on being a sportscaster and doing that kind of thing?
Yeah, more so. I realized early on I didn't have the ability to play sports at a high level.
You want to be a caster, not a sports information guy? Or
I liked – two things came together. I remember when I was about 10, 11, 12 years old, and that was, A, I love sports, but was pretty sure I wasn't going to be professional or even college material. And B, I love to talk. Given a chance to write a written report or an oral report, I always chose the oral. And I said, I like to talk, I like sports, I'll be a sportscaster. It was as simple as that in my mind.
Did you have a plan set out or anything? Or?
Not specifically, like Dad said. I mean, I was young and naive and thought, well, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
That's fortunately for me, it's not working.
Make a living out.
He's done pretty well, I'd say. What about idols? Kaywood obviously had some influence.
He was the main one because I grew up listening to him and had the most contact with him. But there have been...
Who are some of the sports people that you may not work with, but you've heard do games or you kind of had admiration
for? I always loved Dick Enberg when he was in his prime. He had... To me, sports is still meant to be fun, and Dick had this good-natured manner about him when he broadcast games. I always liked him. Maybe the best wordsmith is Vin Scully, the longtime Dodgers announcer. He's just a guy who's so smooth and always has the great expressions and proper way of describing things. And there's a lot of good ones. I have Sirius satellite radio, and you can hear a lot of announcers for a lot of teams, and I think we all like to eavesdrop on each other and see how they do things, and there's a lot of good ones out there.
How's the internet affected? What internet have effect on what you do?
Internet not so much, I mean you can. A lot of games are blacked out on internet, but as far as I'll tell you where the internet has helped most. I mean, I can remember when I first started doing games. If I knew I was going to have a game against West Virginia, you would write them a letter a couple of weeks in advance. They would mail you their roster and stats and so on. And, of course, now everything's right there on the internet.
Smartphone, even while you're on the booth.
Exactly.
You got it right there. Yeah.
Right there. Everything's instantly accessible. That's made things that's the best thing about modern technology I could come up with.
Ever frustrate you once in a while?
Oh, once in a while, a whole lot.
Just once in a while. Well, very good. Anything else you'd like to add about a 40-year career that all your listeners hope will go on a few more?
I'm grateful to the people here who have let me do it as long as they have, and I hope it will continue. These are high times for University of Louisville athletics, that's for sure, and it's been great, great fun to be a part of it, and I hope to continue for however long I can.
What about advice to some young guy who is just in college or coming out of college, who were in the position where you were a few years ago?
I'd tell him what my dad told me, get a fallback. But go for it. I mean, how can I tell you not to? It worked out for me. And as I said, I believe me, every day I understand how fortunate I am. But if it's what you want to do, pursue it, and hopefully it'll work out.
Now, your son Eric, is he a sports guy at all? Or
a little bit. Not. He was never huge into sports. He's now he just recently moved back into town and got married, and he has become a U of L fan. Always followed him, but is maybe getting a little more entrenched as a fan now that he's here and has more exposure to them. But he was never the diehard sports fan that I was.
So you didn't have to give him advice. Find something else because
he's
done well.
He knew to find something else.
Good. Well, Paul, thanks for taking the time.
You bet.
And we look forward to hearing your broadcasts, and I'm sure people over the years will enjoy going back and listening to this, and you'll stir up some memories for them.
Hopefully so.
I had one other question I was thinking about earlier. Who was the quarterback when you first started at calling games at U of L?
Wow. First year quarterback.
The coach was T.W. Alley?
T.W. Alley was the coach. I cannot remember. I know who it was. It was Lynn DePaula.
Yeah.
He came right after Corso's good quarterback, who I know, and his name
Ken something. Well, I don't know. What was it?
I was trying to think that far. The 73, right?
Mm-hmm. But Lynn DePaula was the quarterback.
I don't remember.
Was there an Oiler or somebody? Was there
Early. I knew Wally Oiler, but he was before that.
That was before that, okay.
But
Wally grew up on the same
street. Wally Oiler, grew up down the street from me on Alton Road in St. Matthews. We played Sandlot football and baseball together, sure enough.
How about that?
Yeah, Wally quarterbacked here in the maybe mid to late 60s, I think.
I think that's about right.
Mm-hmm. How about that? Interesting stuff.
But John Medea, that's the quarterback I'm trying to think of, was a real good quarterback under Corso.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then his senior year was before me, and then the year I came in, I got
Lynn DePaula.
You didn't
work with Corso at all, then?
No. In fact,
Allie was
only the coach for 2 years, and I believe his first year was my first year, or it was my first year his second year. I can't remember, but I did not. Corso had already gone to Indiana when I came here.
I came here in 73, and that's about that's when I remember when you came into the station. I remember that.
You were actually the DJ in those days. For my very first sportscast, we had a legendary sportscast that ran at 5:15 every afternoon, and it wasn't like the 2-minute sports hits we have now. It was like a 15-minute sportscast.
Yeah.
It was a daily sportscast that I used to listen to Kaywood Ledford every day. And my first day at work, he let me do that sportscast, and you were the guy.
Is that right?
I didn't
remember that. I didn't remember that.
Yep.
Well, I am wandering a little bit here, but do you remember we used to do a sports? On Saturdays, we gave all the scores.
Telescore 84.
Yeah, and remember that? And people were calling in. And
it was
we had wire things. I mean, now it's on the internet. Everybody's
got
to
that
run
was
the
before you had the internet.
Right,
and people wanted to know football scores. And we came on after the UK game, if they were playing, or before.
Yeah.
And did a 2-hour show
where
people just called in, asked for scores, and we'd chat and we'd get scores.
What does Triple Rock do today? Somebody always called and asked.
Yeah,
that.
We'd look them up.
84.
Yeah,
we had a big chalkboard that we would tally the scores on, and like you said, mountains of paper because you're getting score updates and keep. That was a blast. That show was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I thought the other day about I could get on and get a score. I'd get a score from 50 years ago on the internet now, but then you couldn't do that.
Yep.
Well, the reason I asked about the quarterback, I could not remember a quarterback between Unitas and the two guys you named I didn't remember.
John Medea was a very good quarterback.
Medea, I remember. Not I don't remember the first
yeah
guy.
Well, all right, I'm sure we'll think some other things, but if we do, we'll turn the quarterback on.
Okay,
thanks, Paul.
Right.
And Bob.
Okay,
bye.